this is Dr. Joyce Starr, and I want to welcome you to Rights Radio for homeowners, pet owners, and consumers in distress. I'm the author of Defend Your Condo and Homeowner Rights and publisher of the first Homeowner's Defense Kit. Please visit my website at starpublications.com. That's S-T-A-R-R, publications with an S, .com. And you can also find on the site a link where you can purchase a consultation for your homeowners association problems. I want to take this opportunity to welcome our guest. Our special guest today is Michael Letcher. He's the president of the Home Insurance Buyer's Guide, and we're going to be talking about that at length. And also, in about 20 or 25 minutes into the show, we're going to break for a wonderful discussion, a short one, but nevertheless terrific, with Dr. David Goldenberg on new legislation that was just passed in Florida for condo owners and condo association rights. Now, Michael, back to you. First of all, I want to welcome you to today's show.
Thank you very much, Dr. Starr. It's great to be here.
Okay. Well, Michael, we're going to talk about the top mistakes to avoid when you're looking for affordable homeowners insurance. And I would like to open with a little background, if you would, on the whole topic of homeowners insurance. Perhaps begin with a little bit of background about you and how you moved into this field.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Starr. My background originally was in financial services. I was a senior vice president of finance with Bank of America, worked my way up through the accounting and auditing fields for a lot of Fortune 500 companies. I left the Fortune 500 and Bank of America at the end of 2004 and started several of my own businesses, one of which is the Home Insurance Buyer's Guide, LLC, and the URL for that is www.homeinsurancebuyers.org. And the best way to describe me, Dr. Starr, is, I'm a Florida homeowner myself, so I'm in one of the states that is facing significant issues around homeowners insurance. And, when you talk about homeowners insurance, when you talk about it in many states around the union, people glaze over when you start talking about it. They look at you like, what's the big deal? Don't I just pick up the phone and call Nationwide, State Farm, Allstate, and get my coverage? And there's so many people after my business that who cares? But as you know, in many states in the past couple of years, Florida, California, the Gulf states, New England, et cetera, we have had significant weather events that have led to losses in the insurance industry, claims that exceed over $200 billion in losses. For states like Florida, that's not new because it goes back to 1991, Hurricane Andrew kind of time frame, 1992. But we had significant hurricane seasons, 2004, 2005. The Gulf states, of course, had Hurricane Katrina along with Florida. California has experienced the issues with earthquakes, wildfires, and pretty much anywhere along the eastern seaboard, including places you wouldn't even expect, but even New York City has faced significant issues with people trying to find affordable homeowners insurance. And last but not least, you can't rule out the Midwest with the tornadoes and also wildfires as well.
All right, I want to just interrupt you here for a moment. First, to ask if you could speak up a little bit, because we want to have people hear you very, very clearly, and you have so much to say. So talk a little bit louder, if you could, into the mic.
Okay.
And the second is, I want to repeat the number you just gave us, and that is $200 billion in losses for homes and condos and homeowners association. Is that $200 billion across the nation?
Yes, it is, and that would cover, let's say, the last 4 or 5 years' worth of damages.
So, okay, over 4 to 5 years, so where has it been getting worse, I would imagine, or is it getting better?
The weather patterns, we seem to be in a cycle that is producing abnormally high occurrences of these catastrophic events, and you know, we had many states had a breather the last couple of years, but the wildfires are continuing, and you know, the tornadoes are still out there in force. So it seems like we get a break from one form of weather, and only to shift to something else.
All right. Well, I was wondering about that, because with all of the bad experiences that these insurance companies are having, and they, I would imagine, have some sense of the weather patterns and where tornadoes and other things are going to hit, are they pulling out of high-risk states?
Yes. The major carriers, you know, the biggest names in insurance that everyone knows as household names, State Farm, Allstate, Nationwide, in many states are either refusing to write new business or, and in some states, they're exiting altogether. So in, let's say, the Gulf states in Florida, the State Farms of the world aren't writing any new business. In California, Allstate recently announced they wouldn't be writing new business there as well. So what's happening is there's a shift from national, well-known, branded carriers that we all know to smaller regional companies are trying to step in and fill the void and the shortage of available homeowners insurance.
Well, that's pretty important, I would say. It's like a major shift in the industry, but yet they're still making money. Hand over fist, or they're not? They're losing money?
No, I mean, it's you know, if you look at their results, you know, they're struggling to even break even.
Okay.
You know, and you know, you can argue about what's the cause of that, but you know, they need probably about 10 years of calm to actually break even in their financial model.
So in that sense, why are these small guys moving into it? Because aren't they going to be hurt as well? Isn't it going to be hard for them? Won't they struggle and lose money?
It's a great question, Dr. Starr. What's happening is in many states, Florida included, you need about $5 million of investor capital to start up your own insurance company, and you have to be able to demonstrate that you have applied for and successfully acquired reinsurance coverage to back you up for your losses. So, but if you can meet those tests, and you have to be rated by one of the major financial rating agency services like an AM Best or a Demotech. But if you meet that threshold and you have that $5 million of investor capital, that's enough to move forward with your company. Now, a lot of it is chance when you first start out. You know, you can build a book of business very quickly, as you can imagine, with homeowners insurance being so scarce. It doesn't take you long. You almost have people knocking your door down to buy the coverage because they can't find it anywhere else. And a lot of it becomes a game of luck. Can you form a company, get 5, 6, 7 years under your belt, you know, grow your cash reserves, and then ultimately, you know, have enough financial footing to succeed from that point forward?
Okay. Well, what risk does a homeowner assume by not having insurance?
It's a risk that most of us don't want to take. You know, the first consideration is, you know, does your mortgage require it? And pretty much it's 100% across the board. Anyone who has lent you money and secured by your house is going to want that home covered for, you know, perils, wind, fire, you know, all those different forms of damage. So the people that tend to go bare, tend to be, you know, don't have the coverage, they tend to be the people who are mortgage-free. And then they're taking that risk on themselves, and, you know, who knows what they're doing. Either they're saving money, setting money aside each year, building a little reserve themselves, or maybe they're just going to take the risk and they'll cross that bridge when they get to it.
Are there numbers on that so that you know that of those who are not mortgaged and actually own outright, X percentage do not have home insurance?
Yes, it's a fairly small number. It's less than 5%. It's somewhere in that category, 5 to 10. But for the most part, it's the people who have paid off their homes.
Okay. What kind of insurance should a homeowner have, and why? I have multiple insurance policies. Not sure I need them all, but we're worried. So what should we have?
Well, for sure, you want to cover the structure. You know, the dwelling is the number one thing. You know, you want to make sure that you've got enough coverage on that dwelling to rebuild it after a major event. So that drives pretty much everything else. And then, you know, again, a lot of states, you know, are talking about, you know, should you be able to separate out a loss due to a wind event, you know, a hurricane or tornado, whatever, from fire and some of the more traditional losses. But the dwelling coverage is absolutely the most important. And then underneath that are things like coverage on your contents, your personal possessions. You know, each homeowner's got to make a decision about how much coverage they want on their personal items and some of their more high-value items. And then, you know, you also have to think about liability coverage. What happens if someone, you know, the example was always somebody slips on your front sidewalk or you left something in the way, in the pathway in your house. How do you cover yourself if you get sued for that? And you and I have also talked offline about pet liability, you know, dogs and whatever biting people on your property. There are significant lawsuits around that. So those are the major areas that, you know, you want to make sure you've thought about and make sure you're covered adequately.
You mentioned something that I'd like you to refer to here, and that was a horrendous case that dealt with a pet and somebody lost their insurance. Could you go into that for a moment?
Yes. One of the subscribers to our buyer's guide for years in Florida paid a very high price to have coverage for wind for a hurricane event with Citizens, Florida's state-run property insurance company. Citizens covered the wind, and a private insurance company covered all the other losses, all the other risks. And so together, those two premiums that this person was paying was a very significant premium, probably around, I think it was $9,000 a year across those two policies.
Huh.
So you can imagine the relief that this homeowner felt, and it happened only about 4 months ago, when they found out that they could get one policy that covered all their risk, including hurricane, for about $4,000 a year. So they were about ready to save $5,000 a year. They were about ready to start up the coverage with this new company, and at the 11th hour, with just a couple days to go before the policy was going to take effect, the insurance company that was going to provide the coverage backed out at the last minute and said, you have a Great Dane. That is one of our top 10 vicious dog breeds. We're concerned about that risk, so we're not going to offer the policy. So this person was literally days away from a $5,000 a year savings, only to lose that coverage due to their Great Dane being in that vicious dog category.
I'm sure that that may be the first time they ever heard that a Great Dane was vicious.
Yes, I think that was their introduction to that, yes.
I have never heard of a Great Dane. Aren't they very calm and gentle animals, Great Danes?
Yes, actually they are, and that's, you know, that's the certainly the disposition that this particular homeowner, their Great Dane, was calm and never, you know, had no prior incidents of biting anyone or anything like that. This list that the insurance industry keeps of, let's call it, a top 10 vicious dog breed, you know, we're not talking about hundreds of thousands of cases. You know, we're talking about maybe 10,000 cases nationwide of these kinds of attacks. And, you know, by the time you get to the 10th dog on that list, you know, you're talking few and far between. But my understanding is the litigation that results from these dog bites can approach $1 million per case. So I think that's what's driving it, but it doesn't take very many bites, very many attacks to make for a particular dog breed to make its way onto that list.
Hmm. And they never get off, right?
Yeah, they never get off. And then, you know, think about that. I mean, so the animal is the only thing standing between that homeowner and being able to protect their property from
a
hurricane.
She wasn't willing to give up the Great Dane, I'm sure.
Yes. Yes.
yes, she was not, correct?
No, she did not want to give the Great Dane, and she did file a complaint with the Office of Insurance Regulation, but they turned that around and bounced it right back to her and didn't even pursue it with the company.
Okay, so that nothing came of that for this poor woman. Well, what are
yes.
the minimum and maximum amounts that you recommend for the primary insurance policies, for example?
Yeah, as far as the dwelling value and how much coverage you put in place, that really needs to be done with your insurance agent, and it needs to be done on a replacement cost basis. And so, the insurance agents will work through with you, how many square feet you have, what type of construction the home is, and they have these value calculators that will literally construct your house sort of section by section and come up with a dwelling value. And there's several databases that they use for that so they can kind of cross-compare against each other. And then behind the scenes, you also have the mortgage company, if you have a mortgage, which most of us do, that will step in at the last minute, and if they see that you're not going to put enough coverage on your dwelling in place, they'll step in at the last minute and say, listen, Joyce, you need to add another $20,000 or you're short. So.
Well, this is interesting because in my own case, I don't remember my agent telling me what was recommended for, let us say, contents. She basically let me decide on my own. There was no recommendation, and it's a very one of those preeminent companies, and I don't remember anybody ever using a calculator to tell me anything. It was all hit or miss.
Yes, they will let you pick your number as it relates to your personal possessions and your content. On
right.
the dwelling, on the building itself, they'll recommend a value, and like I said, your mortgage company behind the scenes will step in if you're short on that.
But when you live in a condo, the structure is covered by your condo. You don't have control over that insurance policy. You don't pay for that insurance policy. But what you do pay for is hurricane insurance, or you have the option to purchase hurricane insurance, and even flood insurance. Now, there, again, I was not given any suggestions. Simply, you want it, you don't want it, here are the levels.
That's right. There's not a lot of guidance when it comes to personal possessions and content. You're pretty much on your own, so you've got to make your own lists and in particular ask about where does high-value coverage kick in, computers, jewelry, watches.
Yeah, but it's more than your personal possessions. When you're in a condo, you know so much better than I, I'm sure, that part of the structure is interior. And while the condo is responsible for damage, there are lines that are hard to fathom or even cross. For example, if water comes pouring in from a pipe that broke, the condo is responsible for the outer wall, and you're responsible for the inner wall. And I'm hard put to think of the things attached to a wall as possessions or dear possessions, though they might have been costly, cabinets and et cetera. But one doesn't normally think about their kitchen cabinets as their possessions per se.
Yes,
and yet
exactly.
That can easily come to a 10 or 15 or even a higher replacement cost.
Yes, a good agent should be helping you calculate the value of those interior structures, so to speak.
Well, I don't think that the agents are. I mean, I think one of the things that people can turn to you for and get help with is the fact that you can direct them to caring agents, if such exist out there, and I'm sure they do, because this seems to me quite fundamental. And also, the agents rarely disclose what is written in an almost invisible ink between the lines. You can see it if you read your policy upside down and inside out, but I think the insurance companies have counted for years on the fact that you wouldn't.
Yes, it's very painful to read the text of those policies.
Correct. Can you identify the major difference, for example, between condo and homeowner's insurance?
Yes, you were hitting on it earlier. You know, it really comes down to you know, with the home, you know, with homeowners insurance, you know, pretty much across the board, you've got to cover the structure and the contents, you know, the building and the contents, and again, you should do it at replacement cost. And then as far as the homeowners insurance is concerned, every single homeowners association has a different set of rules and a different set of bylaws that governs where that master association policy starts and stops. You know, so some of them are very, very specific about, you know, as you said earlier, the master association policy covers the roofs, the outer walls, every homeowner or every condo owner needs to look specifically at where does their obligation stop and mine start. You know, so does their obligation stop with the studs? Does it count the plaster? Does it count painting the interior walls? And then I kick in with the cabinets and the flooring. So each homeowner needs to know what that situation is. Now, again, a good homeowner or a good condo association agent, when you're buying this condo unit owner coverage, which is what we're talking about, a good one will look at the documents from your association, and they're clued into how that particular condo association is structured, and they'll know specifically what those coverages should be.
I think that if you can find me an agent who does that, we ought to put them on the air and give them a gold star, because it's it doesn't exist.
I agree with you. Some of the larger condo associations and developments are well known to the agents and insurance companies. And so if you say I live in this location, if you're with a good agent, they'll know, or the insurance company will know, what those bylaws provide for. But a good one will ask for you to provide that information anyway, your association documents.
I am elated to hear you say this, because it's a very vital piece of information for those who are listening to the show or will hear it in the future. I don't think that one out of 1,000, if not 10,000 people, have any idea of what the insurance agent should or should not do, or what actually marks a very good agent from a poor agent. Oftentimes, these are people who are hired out of school, or they're young, but the main agent, the master agent, if you would, is very experienced, but the master agent has many employees catering to a lot of people, and really your situation is not the priority of their lives.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, Joyce. There, you know, a well-run insurance agency, as you said, you know, will have lower-level agents and producers that gather the information. But before that final policy is put in place, before it's bound and they take your money, the agent in charge, with all the experience and knowledge, that's the person who should be reviewing that final policy and saying, you know, have we talked with Dr. Starr about her cabinets and her contents?
Right.
Have we made sure she's adequately covered? I agree with you that those steps that do not happen across the board, for sure.
No, they don't. Well, I want to talk about those mistakes, and we're going to talk about the top mistakes that you can make and other very vital issues that we listed for this program. But I want to take a brief break to allow Dr. Goldenberg, who's on this call, to share with our audience the new laws covering, well, actually a single law covering condo associations and condo owner rights. It has been recently signed into law by Florida's governor, and it does have implications across the country. We'll have another show on this topic, a specific show, with Congressman State Representative Julio Rubino, who forged this and pushed it forward. But right now we'd like Dr. Goldenberg to share some of the high points. So would you forgive us for just a few minutes while we break to this other topic, Michael?
Oh, that sounds great.
Okay, so hold on with us. And David, can you hear me?
Just about, but good
evening.
Great.
Okay, well, here we have David Goldenberg, who is a prolific author and the author of a wonderful book on condo and homeowners association documents, which you can find on our website at starpublications.com and also drjoycestarr.com. That's S-T-A-R-R in all cases. And Dr. Goldenberg is also the author of 10 Ways to Recall Your Condo Board, 10 Steps for Recalling Your Condo Board. As I said, he's prolific. Now, David, I'd like you to talk a little bit for the 10 minutes or so that we have, a little bit less. What do you see as the key points of the new Florida law?
Well, first of all, let me say that any reader who's interested can go to www.ccfj.net, and that'll bring you to the Cyber Citizens for Justice Home webpage. Scroll down a bit, you'll find a big button that you can click on to find out the latest summary. There are about 38 different changes in the condo law. They're, in my opinion, fixes or minor problems rather than an overall correction, but they are significant. And those changes range from liability for monetary damages, disclosure, audits, for financial reporting, eliminating ghost voting, so on. Now, each of these changes is intended to correct a problem that's finally been recognized. The main thing is that this covers about half the households in associations. It doesn't help homeowners. That's the project for next year. But there are a lot of missing changes still to be taken care of. So you have to watch yourself carefully if you're in a condo, and even more carefully if you're in a homeowners association. The important thing about these changes is the shift in balance of power to help homeowners against other vested interests. Hopefully, with time, these problems will be eliminated.
So the key element here, and again, I'm going to encourage, as I do every guest, to speak a little bit louder, if you can. But the key change here is in the shift in power, because these 38 changes or fixes, as you say, shift the advantage to the condo owner, or does the association still really have the main advantage?
I'm sorry, I could not hear the question that clearly. The big point is that these changes go into effect 1st of October.
Okay.
So there's time to adjust and learn what the changes are. But the critical thing is that these are patches rather than a shift to a better system. And in many cases, the main underlying problems are a lack of a way to enforce these changes and a lack of recognition of the underlying problems. These only fix current hot issues rather than the underlying causes of the problem. There is some hope in the educational efforts proposed that there will be corrections, but the underlying problem is that there are an awful lot of causes and still not good remedies for those causes.
And you've already mentioned that it takes place in October, not before then.
That's right. In other words, if you're having a tough time now, you've got to hold out for another 6 months.
And David, are you taking, I know your position about legislative changes, are you taking an awkward position by approving the changes but doubting the effectiveness of the legislative process?
Yes, I find it awkward because on the one hand, I'm in favor of the changes that have been made, and disheartened that the political process doesn't deal with the comprehensive changes that I see as needed, and it is not likely to. You have immediate efforts after these changes to repeal them, either in whole or in part, or to substitute weaker efforts rather than stronger ones. So you have a very unstable process. It's the type of situation where you poke your head outside, look at the weather, and, God, it's beautiful. And then you find out, oops, I'm in the middle of the eye of a hurricane. So it's a very unsettled situation, rather than fixing things once and for all.
Okay. I think this is a very important point for anyone who's listening. So on the one hand, it's optimistic and hopeful that it can help, but on the other, as you've said, with a new legislature, changes, the winds of change blowing across Florida, the step forward could be a step backward at any time. So one must keep very far-sighted and caring legislators in place, too.
This means people have to pay attention not only to their own immediate interests, but they have to act to promote better laws for everyone.
Okay, one final point, and then we're going to go back to Michael, and that is, what are the prospects for similar protection for homeowners as distinct for condominium owners, members of homeowners associations or HOAs?
I think you can expect a considerable effort, and hopefully at least as good odds as there were for the condo homeowners. But even so, nowhere do you see enactment of the 10 changes proposed by the AARP to protect constitutional rights and so on. So the odds are better than they were a year ago, but not a lot better.
Okay, well, David, thank you so very much for taking time out today to be with us, and I do hope that people will visit our website to purchase your book and perhaps hopefully purchase a consultation on their homeowners association rights, because nowhere will they get better advice.
Well,
at least
you,
before the prior to
the
legal process kicking in. We're not attorneys. We don't provide legal advice, but there are a lot of issues that are pre-legal or not legal at all, and we can help. So, David, thank you so very much for being with us today. Okay, I think he's signed off. And, Michael, we're back with you.
Oh, great.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. Now, Michael, let's go back to the headline for your show today, the top mistakes to avoid when looking for affordable homeowners insurance. What
yes,
would you say are the top mistakes to make?
Yes.
To avoid.
Yes, Dr. Starr, if your listeners only remember one thing from today, the most important thing to remember is if you shop your homeowners insurance with only one agent, the same agent you've been dealing with for years and years, that is not going to work in states where homeowners insurance is in short supply, Florida, the Gulf States, California, et cetera.
It's not going to work. Sorry, I couldn't hear you clearly. That's not going to work where?
It will not work in the states that we've previously talked about.
Okay.
Where homeowners insurance is in short supply. The reason that it won't work is because every insurance agent is not set up to be able to write policies, to be able to write coverage with all the companies that are writing new business. The reason for that is there is, you know, the companies sometimes select the agents, and so agents can't always get the ability to write coverage with certain companies. If you're an insurance agent, you might not want to carry more than five or six companies because you don't want to go through the administrative costs of having to learn, 12 other carriers, administrative systems, claim processing, how to write the policies, et cetera. So, again, I want to make sure your audience understands that if you're only going to one agent and that agent tells you that they cannot find a private homeowner insurance company for you, and they tell you that you have to go in the state-run carrier, which in Florida is Citizens, and other states have state-run carriers as well. If those agents are telling you you have to go into Citizens or the state-run carrier, it might not be accurate. And that's why you want to be proactive and find out about all the companies that will write new business and contact multiple agents to make sure that you get to all the companies that might cover your home. Now, one of the ways to do that is to pick an independent agent. Now, what do I mean by an independent agent? If you go to an agent like a State Farm agent or an Allstate agent, they are what is called captive agents, meaning that for the most part, an agent who represents them cannot write coverage with other companies as well. Independent agents, on the other hand, can carry 10, 12, 14 different homeowner insurance companies, and they can give you more options. So if one of the companies they carry won't write your home because of its age or how close it is to water, et cetera, they might have five other companies that will write you. And that whole premise, what I just described about, making sure you get to all the companies that are writing business, that's the whole premise behind our organization and my website, again, homeinsurancebuyers.org. That's what we help people do, to find all the companies that will write you, and then you work backwards to find the agents who represent those companies.
Now, when people turn to you and they go to your website, can they also, aside from buying the buyer's guide, which is so important, can they also call you and get your help directly if they're just terribly confused?
We do have a, from the website, there's actually a customer support, a contact form they can use to write in with questions if they want. They can also subscribe to our free e-zine newsletter called Florida Homeowner Insurance Alert that keeps people up to date on what's going on in the market, how available is homeowners insurance at the present time. So there's lots of different ways that we can interact with people that come to the website.
You're in Florida, and you're talking primarily about Florida coverage, but I would assume that your knowledge extends across the nation and that the Florida paradigm has implications across the nation.
Absolutely. We are planning on expanding into all of the states I mentioned earlier that are experiencing a short supply of homeowners insurance.
And how are you going to expand? Are you, in other words, you're going to become knowledgeable about the agents and the companies in those states? What does it mean exactly?
Yes, I couldn't have said that any better. It literally means for each state that we would go into, let's say we go into California next, we'll have to start with, the 1,000 companies that are licensed to write out there, and we'll have to do the market research to find out, well, of those 1,000, how many will write new business? How many will write a new policy? And then we'll develop our database from that, from all that research.
One thing I would like to say is that we're going to want to have you back at a later date. We'd like to have you as part of our brain trust on home insurance and various carriers, because I think this is terribly important for our audience on consumer rights, and you sound like exactly the right person to turn to.
Oh, well, thank you. Unfortunately, when things get expensive and they become in short supply, the way homeowners insurance is, we all end up having to become a lot more knowledgeable than we used to have to be, So in the old days, when there was a plentiful supply of homeowners insurance, you could just rely on the agent network to help you. But with the way things are today and the markets being as tight as they are and the coverage being so hard to find, you've got to have other tools and knowledge at your disposal to help you with this.
And what do you do if your homeowner's insurance is canceled?
Well, my first piece of advice there is do not accept immediately if your agent who's representing the company that got that canceled you, don't accept right off the bat that you have to go into the state-run carrier. That may not be true. If that agent is not giving you alternative homeowner insurance companies, you have to go research that with other agents. And again, as I said earlier, use independent agents who represent 10, 12, 15 companies at once, as opposed to an agent who only writes for one company. So don't accept that face value. Do your own research to find out for sure whether there's another private company that might write you.
But what about the fact that you've been canceled? Is it something like a bad credit rating? Once you're canceled, you'll never get insurance again, even with the state-run carrier?
No. The state-run carrier, it's not like a bad credit rating. I mean, everyone will know that you've been canceled, but that's, it just simply means that the company that you're with doesn't want that risk anymore. And, every state that we've talked about on this show, has a state-run option for you if you can't find coverage in the private market. But you have to, as soon as you get that notice, and each state varies, but they usually have to give you at least 90 days notice before canceling you, you've got to take advantage of that cancellation window to go find alternative coverage.
Every state, and I'd like you to talk about this just for a second, every state has a state-run carrier. In other words, there is no state where you absolutely cannot find insurance. They have to give it to you. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that is true. And again, now in California, they have a state-run carrier that is specific for earthquake risk. So, your home being damaged in an earthquake, that's a risk that the state of California carries. So the private carriers out there write all the forms of losses except for an earthquake, and then the state pool kicks in if you have an earthquake out there. Florida's state-run carrier, Citizens Property, carries a lot of the hurricane risk, although some of that's in the private market as well. So it kind of goes state by state, but, for specific types of catastrophes that happen in other states, the states have done a good job and they've responded and they've put a backstop in place so that there's at least some form of insurance coverage that you can get if the private market won't take you.
Well, this is terrific. This is important to know. I wasn't aware of it, so I'm sure that many others are not aware, even that where their states are trying to help, that they're helping in such a fundamental way. I would assume if I had received a notice that I was canceled that I would be in very deep trouble, but from what you say, you may not be.
That's right, and I think an important question to ask is, there are in each state there are pros and cons associated with being with the state-run carrier or with private insurance companies. One of the things, Dr. Starr, that I think everyone needs to be aware of is that even the state-run insurance companies are now facing a very difficult time in the bond market. Let's use Citizens Insurance in Florida, the state-run carrier, as an example. They do not charge enough premium to cover the $485 billion in losses that they're potentially on the hook for if every property they insured was hit by a hurricane. Of course, that's not going to happen, but let's say a $30 billion storm happened this coming hurricane season. Citizens Property Insurance does not have enough in the way of financial reserves to pay those claims. So what they do is they actually go out in the bond market and issue bonds to investors to raise the money to pay for those claims. Now, one of the problems that's happened is, I'm sure you've heard of the subprime mortgage meltdown, where a lot of investors invested in mortgages that were adjustable rate mortgages, et cetera, and the homeowners have defaulted or foreclosed on the home, so the investors haven't gotten their money back. Well, because of that subprime mortgage crisis that we're still working through the system at the moment, that is creating difficulties for state-run insurance carriers to go out and borrow money if they need to in the event of a catastrophic event. So what I like to tell consumers about this is if you have to go into a state-run carrier and that's your only option, be glad it's there and take advantage of it. But I think we are going to be facing down the road some pretty dangerous situations where state-run carriers might not be able to satisfy all their claims. And so if you can avoid going into a state-run carrier and you can find even one private insurance company option, you should try and get that so that you don't become part of a larger problem.
Oh, this is terribly important. Now you send a shiver up my spine. In other words, here comes a mighty Florida hurricane, and we all have been paying for this insurance, which we think will protect us, and suddenly the company, the state-run company, cannot meet the claims because it happened to everybody at once. Is that a possibility?
That is definitely possible in the current environment. It all hinges on their ability to borrow in the investor market. And investors are getting jittery with a lot of what's working its way through the financial markets at the present time. A lot of people don't know this, but last fall, Citizens, the state-run carrier in Florida again, tried to issue bonds to raise money and could not sell out the entire offering of the bonds. And so it's what's called a failed auction or a failed sale. But they went to the public investing market and could not get people to invest in the bonds they wanted to sell.
They couldn't sell it all, or they couldn't sell most of it, or
they couldn't sell most of it.
Oh.
So what do you think is going to happen when they go to the bond market after a $25 billion hurricane and try and get investors to buy those bonds? First of all, just to get the investors to talk to them, they're going to have to offer a very, very high interest rate. So there's a whole new phenomenon that's going on out there that the public is not fully aware of. And so, like I said, if your only option is a state-run carrier, you have to go with it. But, you know, there's a lot of good reasons why you should try and stay in the private market if you can.
What I'm delighted about is that you're going to be doing a special report for us, which will be available on our website soon. I'm very excited. Now that we're having this terrific discussion, it just shows how important it is that this report be made available to the public, and it might actually end up helping you save your home. Now, I, for one, was not aware at all about Citizens' problems. I'm not thinking about it. It's not my priority. I'm moving on with my life, and you're following Citizens and others, and we need that kind of vigilant attention. But having said that, and letting people know about your forthcoming report, where are we now? What do those of us who hold Citizens or similar coverage in other states with state-run carriers do? Do we run for the hills?
Well, I would advise anyone who is with a state-run carrier to keep an eye on the private market and to look for opportunities when they come up. To join the private market and get out of the state-run
carrier. Well, how do they look? How do they keep their eyes open and look?
Well, that's really what our organization does. That's primarily what we do, is we track the private market. So we talked earlier on your show about new companies being formed and new companies mm-hmm. starting to write. Now, when a new company gets licensed in a state to write homeowners insurance, they're hungry in the beginning to get new policyholders. So in the beginning, when they're brand new, they will take on risks that they might not take when they're 5 years old because they want to build that initial book of business. So it's during that initial window when they first come to the market that they're most likely to be willing to either take a policy out of a state-run carrier or be open to someone in a state-run carrier coming to them and saying, hey, can I get coverage with you? So one of the things consumers can do is to pay attention to the news reports. That, you know, most media outlets do run stories when a new company gets licensed, especially in states like Florida, California, et cetera, where there's a scarcity of homeowners insurance.
But can these little companies hold up with that type of disaster? $20, $30 billion hurricane in a particular state or an earthquake. What is to stop the little company from simply folding if it only started with $5 or $10 million and maybe it's amassed more, but still?
Yes, no, that's a great question. The little companies are going to try and do the same thing the larger ones do, which is basically two things. One is if for every dollar in premium that you give them, they're going to take about 40 cents of that dollar and they're going to buy reinsurance protection, and the states require them to do that so that they're not on the hook for every single dollar that is lost if your home is destroyed. So that's one of the things the state regulators pay close attention to, making sure that those startup insurance companies have adequate reinsurance coverage. And then the second thing that each of these companies are going to do is they have their own, as you mentioned earlier, weather prediction models and prior hurricane paths for the last 100 years, et cetera. And they've got a history of these storms, and then they use these models to predict where they're going to occur in the future. And then based on those models, they decide, okay, these are the zip codes that I'm going to be willing to write in, and these are the ones I'm not going to be willing to write in. And that's how they try to manage that risk. So the short answer to your question is there isn't a perfect model that ensures long-term survival for these insurance companies. But, thinking about top homeowner mistakes, I'm back to the point that anyone shopping for insurance should check the financial ratings of their homeowner's insurance companies as well.
Wouldn't the state step in more readily to back their state-run carrier, and wouldn't the federal government help the state back the state-run carrier in times of dire emergency, such as the earthquakes in California?
There is movements in the state governments to try and beef up these state-run carriers and to try and find better funding sources for them. There's a very delicate balance there because, as you know, in the state-run carriers, there's lots of pressure from voters to keep rates down. So one of the fundamental problems is that the state-run carriers don't charge enough premium for the risk that they're taking on.
They don't?
No, they do not.
In other words, the homeowner feels that they're being taken to the cleaners, but they're not?
No, actually, across the board, the state-run carriers are not bringing in enough premium dollars to cover.
That's astounding.
That's a significant issue. In fact, in Florida this year in the legislature, they looked at reducing the size of the state's catastrophe fund because they wanted to take the state off the hook for some of this risk. So the state-run carriers are always in this endless battle between the people who run the state-run companies trying to collect enough money to pay the claims and the taxpayers and voters wanting to have reasonable premiums. So that issue is always going to be out there. But right now, across the board, the state-run carriers do not charge enough for the risk they're taking on. They do not build enough cash reserve. Just as an example, in Florida, Citizens has borrowed probably $10 billion in advance of hurricane events. Because they just don't have enough in their own reserves to handle this kind of stuff. So they're using the borrowing capacity of that state-run company to do what's called pre-event funding, pre-event borrowing.
What do you call that again?
It's called pre-event funding.
Pre-event funding, okay.
Pre-event funding. So that's borrowing in advance of a catastrophic event so that you have a significant cash reserve on hand. That is something that private insurance companies don't have to do. They charge enough premium and they have enough cash in reserve to help them through crises like this.
So the private company can charge more, but on the other hand, they're actually charging less because they're competing. So how do they charge less in order to eventually charge more? It's a bit of a catch-22.
Yes. The private companies, again, they don't have to insure everywhere in all zip codes, and they don't have to insure along the beaches and, you know, near tidal water and stuff like that. So right off the bat, they've got a more favorable mix of risks that they're taking.
All right. Well, I'm afraid, unfortunately, because I'd like to go on for another hour with you, but we're going to have to wait to do that until your special report comes out. And because we're out of time today. So I want to encourage everyone to visit your website. Please give the URL once again.
Yes, it's www.homeinsurancebuyers.org.
And is there a telephone number that you'd like them to call?
The best thing is to just have homeowners go to the website, and they can contact us via the forms. And if we need to talk by phone, we could do that as well.
Perfect. Michael, I want to thank you for being with us today. I want to encourage people to visit your website. I hope they'll visit our website at starpublications.com or drjoystar.com and, of course, rightsradio.com. We're taking care of your rights, and that's what we're here to do. Thank you very much for being with us today, Michael.
Thank you, Dr. Starr.
Okay. Bye-bye.